This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. President Obama is visiting the Gulf Arab Kingdom of Saudi Arabia this week amid heightening tensions with the U.S. At the heart of the clash are 28 pages from the 9/11 Commission report that were withheld and that some members of Congress believe hold the key to Saudi Arabia's never-before-revealed role in the September 11th terrorist attacks. Saudi officials, angered by the suspicions, have threatened to sell off hundreds of billions of dollars of American assets if it is held culpable. My guest is Ali Al-Ahmed. He is the director of the Institute for Gulf Affairs. And earlier this year, he wrote the New York Times op-ed entitled Saudi Arabia is a burden, not a friend to the U.S. Welcome to the show, Ali.
Thank you for having me.
Now, these 28 pages from the 9/11 Commission report have surfaced over and over in, over the years since the Commission report was first published. The idea of them, of course, they have been sealed by the Bush administration. As far as you know, what is supposed to be in them, and why is this controversy being resurrected now?
The controversy has been always ongoing. It just it ebbs and flows over the time. I don't think there is a relationship between the visit and the talk of the 28 pages. The 28 pages, they embarrass the Saudis. I'm not sure if it implicates them directly into the September 11 attacks. But that in itself, the fact that the U.S. government, consecutive administrations, the Bush and Obama administrations have kept these pages secret, gives you an indication of how strong the relationship between the U.S. administration and the Saudi monarchy, and how influential a Saudi king or influence a Saudi king has over an American administration. So I think even if these pages are made public, It will not result in significant change in U.S. policy vis-a-vis the Saudi monarchy and other GCC monarchies, for that matter.
Vox News covered the 28 pages, and they cited that one member of Congress was unnamed, told press, the real question is whether it was sanctioned at the royal family level or beneath that, and whether these leads were followed through, it meaning the 9/11 attacks. Senator Bob Graham said the 28 pages, and a few members of Congress have seen these, but they can't talk about it in detail. Bob Graham said the 28 pages primarily relate to who financed 9/11, and they point a very strong finger at Saudi Arabia as being the principal financier. So as far as I understand, Ali, people who lost families on 9/11 want to sue or want the right to sue Saudi Arabia, but they can't because of U.S. laws preventing them. So Congress wants to change those laws, and that's why the Saudis are panicking?
I think so. I mean, there is a panic, and I think that although there is significant support for a law allowing the families of September 11 to sue, it's very clear the Obama administration made it clear that they will veto this, and I don't know if there is enough votes to override the president's veto. And again, this shows the influence of the Saudi monarchy over American presidents. This is not the first president who is susceptible, but this is, I think, one of the most susceptible presidents to such influence and pressure.
Even more so than the Bush administration?
I believe so, and that is reflected in the American policy vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia, supporting Saudi invasion of Bahrain, Saudi invasion and bombing of Yemen. The U.S. is a silent partner in these two wars led by the Saudis. Since September 11, in the past few years, the rise of ISIS happened under Obama. ISIS is more so than even September 11. The Saudi government is involved in funding and supporting ISIS, yet the Obama administration is not even willing to speak gently to the Saudis about this issue.
So what does bind these two countries together? I mean, the obvious ones that we've known over the years are that the U.S. buys oil from Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia uses some of that money, maybe a lot of it, to buy weapons from the United States. Is it oil and weapons? Are those the two bases for the relationship between the two countries?
I think these are false analogies because China China holds $1.3 trillion of U.S. debt. The Chinese export nearly $500 billion, half a trillion dollar, to the American market. And the other side, the Americans also export around $450 billion, very similar amounts to the Chinese market. So the size of trade and financial engagements between the Chinese and the Americans is probably 10 times greater than the entire GCC relationship with the Americans. Yet you don't see that influence that the Chinese have, Chinese leaders have over the White House. They do have some, but not comparing to the Saudis. And that's why I say it's not about that. It's about how the Saudis and other Gulf monarchies were able to really penetrate and compromise the leadership, the top leadership of this country, in terms of giving them large financial contributions. As a human being, our first driver is our interest, self-interest. And the presidents and senior officials are not exempt from that, from those personal interests that drives their decisions. And you can see with the Obama, you will see what happened with the Clintons receiving over $50 billion from Gulf countries and through the foundation. Carter is the same. Bush, to some extent, at least that I know of. But generally, American politicians, after they leave office, they look for money. And that money comes, a lot of it comes from the Gulf. And that really drives a lot of the supposedly national decisions. A lot of American foreign policy decisions are not driven by American interests, but by the interests of officials making those decisions, either state secretary of state, secretaries of defense, and even American presidents. Hmm.
So what do you make of this threat by Saudi Arabia that was recently reported in the New York Times, that if Congress were to go through with this piece of legislation that we talked about earlier, that it would sell off billions of dollars of American assets and tank the U.S. economy? A lot of people are saying it's just a bluff.
It is, in a way, a bluff, but for the fact that the Saudis feel comfortable saying these things gives you an indication of how comfortable and how used they are to telling the American policymakers what to do, even to the degree that they are willing to threaten the United States with economic warfare. Again, you didn't see any American reaction to this. They did not imagine if the Russians said something like that, or the
Chinese.
Well,
no public reaction, certainly.
Yes, I mean, if it was the Chinese who did the same, who did this, there will be a huge outrage, a huge backlash. Yet the Saudis are not even verbally rebuked for anything, including their support of September 11 attacks, even if the Saudi government was not involved in the September 11 attacks. The Saudi government have never apologized for their citizens taking part in the September 11 attacks. And that gives you an indication that really they have no pressure from the American administration, either the Bush or the Obama. And I want to give you another indicator in the Gulf country in general, vis-a-vis this administration, the Obama administration's. The GCC human rights condition is now the worst ever in the entire history of the GCC. And that happened during the Obama administration. Executions, mass executions, killing protesters en masse in Bahrain especially, and in Saudi Arabia, death squads in Saudi Arabia and in Bahrain, all Gulf countries, all there, or most of their opposition leaders are either in jail for many years, including life terms, or have been executed. So that gives you an example, for the first time, by the way, that has never happened in the history of the Gulf as a region, that every single country of that region has its leaders, opposition leaders, are in jail or have been executed.
Now, Ali, Amnesty International is using President Obama's visit to Saudi Arabia to call on him to leverage U.S. influence in Saudi Arabia and stop the impending execution of three Shia teenagers in Saudi Arabia. And so apparently it's routine to execute teenagers. Of course, one should point out that the United States itself doesn't have a great record on juvenile detention, incarceration, solitary confinement. We may not execute teenagers. We do execute adults. Still, what do you make of this this call by Amnesty International and other human rights groups?
This might be different, but I think that, in fact, that to ask the Obama administration to intervene to save three lives while not addressing the bigger issue, for example, the unprecedented arms sales that the American government has been selling to the Saudi and other Gulf monarchies, this is a greater...
Which are then used in countries like Yemen.
And in Bahrain, and, yeah. and even in Syria and Iraq. We are not supposed to talk. I wouldn't talk about the side effects, because these prisoners, these executions, are a result of a system that is broken. The system has to change. The fact that these are absolute monarchies, the largest absolute monarchy in the world, are in the Gulf. That's the greater number. There are no, beside Jordan and Morocco and maybe Bhutan, there are no absolute monarchies in the world. The Gulf monarchies are the last remaining, holding and the largest concentration of absolute monarchies. The Obama administration talk of human rights really is going to be basically to cover up the greater issues, the support for terrorism, the sponsorship of terrorism by these GCC governments, and the fact that they are absolute monarchs who do not allow their people to play part in the political decisions. The Obama administration, if they are sincere, they should call for an inclusive governments in the Gulf countries, and for an opening of the political system, for elections, for democracy. Then we would not have kids being executed. We are not supposed to talk about the outcome of the system. We talk about the system that is broken, and I think that is more important for me, at least. I wouldn't talk about prisoners, because prisoners are there in thousands, not only three.
Right.
Because of that
the overarching system is at stake. Yeah.
Yes, that is much more important issue, I think.
Well, Ali, finally, the Wall Street Journal just reported that Saudi Arabia is set to secure a $10 billion loan from international banks to address a budget shortfall because of falling oil prices. Do you feel that the Saudi monarchy might be at a weak point right now economically, because it gathers so much of its strength through money, through its economic clout? If that economic clout is failing, is this, has the monarchy peaked in its power, if you will?
I do not see it that way, because I think the Wall Street Journal, and that's a problem usually with Western analysis of the Gulf countries. They are not, there is two things here. There is the state budget, and there is the budget of the ruling monarchy, which is probably, they own, I estimated through their wealth, over $1 trillion. Around the world, including the United States and Europe and other countries. So if they need to prop up the state, they most likely will do it. But this is the state coffers that are suffering, because, let us be honest, these ruling monarchies have been siphoning the oil revenue for generations. So they have amassed greater amount of wealth than the state itself. So this is a reality, is these are monarchies who own states and control states, and they have personal wealth, stolen, corrupted personal wealth, obviously, greater than the state that they run, including King Salman, who has probably over $20 billion to his name.
Wow. Well, Ali, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and giving us a very nuanced critique of the U.S.-Saudi relations. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Ali Al-Ahmed is the director of the Institute for Gulf Affairs. Earlier this year, he wrote the New York Times op-ed, Saudi Arabia is a burden, not a friend to the United States. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.